Welcome to the Common Geeking Program, a book club podcast where each week three of us read up on a topic and then discuss it from our geeky, nerdy perspectives. This week, I am your host. My name is Laura, and we'll be discussing Galaxy Quest. And the theme that we're talking about today is fandom. I'm joined by two people because I am the third, each of whom have selected a domain that they think connects to this topic. And they are...
How did I come to this?
I don't know, but you're up now.
I was an actor. I won't do this. And I won't say that damn line again.
Is that a William Shatner joke? That sounds like a William Shatner joke. No, that's straight from Galaxy Quest. I forgot.
It's straight from Galaxy Quest, yes. Good job knowing the domain.
Yep.
You already lose the gold star, student.
Lost the gold star.
All right, Chowder, you're up.
Hi, I'm Timel, or Chowder, whichever you prefer.
Ooh, mad about it today.
Okay, in all seriousness, I am repping Yume Nikki today.
What?
Cool.
I have never heard of that.
I have no idea what that is. Well, we'll hear about it later, yeah.
My name is Colin Ketchin. And I am representing another fandom film piece about Star Trek called USS Callister, Black Mirror Season 4, Episode 1.
I am the odd one out here.
You are the odd one out.
There always has to be one. Thank you, guys. I look forward to hearing about those domains a little bit more in detail. So just to tell you guys how this is going to work, we're going to start by summarizing our topic and domains, and then we're going to discuss them for a fun amount of time. And then, as always, we're going to close the episode with a rating section, both to determine how good this particular theme is and also who contributed to the topic the best this week. So I will be handing out a gold student award at the end.
A gold student.
I'm just handing out one whole gold student. It's going to be fantastic.
Jeff is on the call here. Jeff is our editor. Could you keep track of all the script flubs that we have in here?
There's going to be too many of them. Maybe do like a ding every time it happens.
But it won't be a solid gold student. It's going to be like a student and then like he is dipped in gold.
Yeah.
Human electrolysis.
Gold-plated student award. Anyway... I wanted to talk about this today because Galaxy Quest is my favorite movie.
Are you serious?
Yeah, there are movies that I really love, but consistently the movie that I love best is Galaxy Quest. And I think it really does a fantastic job talking about fandom, and we'll hopefully get into that.
Holy shit.
After I chose this movie and topic, I had an opportunity to go to Seattle on vacation, and I went to the Museum of Pop Culture.
Oh, yeah.
Which has... like a ton of stuff with all sorts of fantasy and science fiction, including the suit that Saris wears, the main bad guy in this movie, was in that museum and I got to see it. And I totally fanned out. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that also, but this is my favorite movie.
Did you write a movie about it?
I did not write a movie about it, but it is in the works. And starting now.
That movie is also starring Tim Allen.
Always starring Tim Allen. So we are going to get started. And we're going to start by summarizing this movie. So I first wanted to start off, Galaxy Quest is a movie that came out in 1999, directed by Dean Parisot. Pronunciation unknown. Just guessing there.
No way to find out.
We'll never know. It's fine. But it is starring... Tim Allen, Sigourney Weaver, Alan Rickman, Tony Shalhoub, Sam Rockwell, Daryl Mitchell, Enrico Colantoni, Missy Pyle, Rainn Wilson, and Justin Long, to just name some of them.
It's just such a fucking bang-up cast, this movie.
It just has everyone. And so, and like, a lot of them play kind of smaller characters, which is really fantastic, because then you just kind of pop up and you're like, oh my god, you? What? So, fantastic cast. The premise of the movie is that there's a TV show very similar to Star Trek, and they're at a convention like several years after the show has ended. And like clearly the cast has like had enough of all of this nonsense.
Well, Tim Allen's character is like, he's loving it. Alan Rickman's character basically just wants to, you know.
Die.
Well, R.I.P. Alan Rickman.
Oh, R.I.P. Alan Rickman.
He just wants his button, man.
Button, oh button, oh where hast thou fled?
He just wants to be on the stage, really. And instead he's at these conventions where people are all dressed up as aliens. And he's like, what the fuck is this? So they're at a convention. Tim Allen's character gets like made fun of in the bathroom with the people making fun of him doesn't know. And so he gets really upset about it. And goes home to like get really drunk. And then the next morning, these aliens that are actually aliens come to his house and take him away and bring him to the actual starship.
Well, like real quick.
Yes.
Tim Allen's character lives in a really nice house for like what's supposed to be a washed out has-been actor who hasn't had a real role in 20 years.
Well, yeah, but think about, so Galaxy Quest riffs off Star Trek in a lot of ways in that it went into syndication. The amount of royalties that you get for a show that runs nonstop on multiple channels for decades, he probably doesn't need to do a lot of work to stay relatively comfortable.
And they mentioned that, like, you know, each autographed picture costs like $35. He's got to be making money off of that, too.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, if you're looking at trying to get, like, IRL, if you look at a Star Trek convention, you're looking at minimum, like, $10,000, $20,000 to get a minor name to appear.
Yeah, he's probably doing okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Tim Allen's character goes into space and discovers that this whole thing is actually real and that there's an entire culture of aliens that have been watching the show thinking that they're historical documents.
And they've, like, formed a cargo cult around the show.
Yep. And so their entire society is built exactly on this show. So the ship that they use, all the technology, like, of course, there are some plot holes where aliens or pieces of technology exist that would probably not actually exist in the real world if somebody had written about them.
I think my favorite mechanic with this, that just a crazy, crazy thing that works for slapstick jokes in the movie, is the fact that they watch the show and they watch the characters say technobabble, like, press the quantum, blah, blah, blah. And then they program those functions into the ship. But when Tim Allen is put on the ship, he doesn't actually have to do those things. He just has to mimic it. And then the ship does it for them. So they've designed a ship that just works off audible prompts, but it's basically on a scripted autopilot. They built a ship that does all the work. They don't need the
cast. Except for driving the ship. One of my favorite scenes is, so eventually he gets the whole cast to go up and they think that it's like a nonsense gig. And then they find out that they're actually in space. And they have to drive the ship out of the space station. And Laredo is the ensign that's supposed to be actually physically driving the ship. And they, like, built it around his movements. And so he sits down. He starts pulling out of the space station. And everyone's like, cool, this is working. And then he starts scraping along the outside of the wall. Like, he doesn't aim straight. And so he's just, like, scraping. And everybody's, like, making wincing faces. And it's going around, like, with reaction shots to everyone. And it's like a very drawn out moment. And eventually he breaks free and everybody's like, oh my God. One of the best scenes in the movie. Anyway, the idea is that there's this bad guy, Saris, whose people is wiping out the Thermians. The Thermians are the group of aliens that took Tim Allen's character, which I don't know why I keep on saying Tim Allen's character and not the name. He's Jason Nesmith.
You know what? As much as I admire your commitment to this, I think 0 out of 0 listeners are going to remember any name but Tim Allen. Tim Allen and or Buzz Lightyear, because that would also have worked in this movie if he hadn't already done Toy Story.
So the Thermians bring Tim Allen up to negotiate a peace treaty with these aliens led by Saris. And Tim Allen, like, there's a whole scene where originally he's like, yeah, this fucking piece of shit ugly guy is really dumb. And he's still listening because it's real, and Sigourney Weaver doesn't know that, like, the cutoff sign means, like, make it silent, because, like, how the fuck would you know that if you weren't actually on a spaceship? So he does a really bad job. Saris survives. They have to flee. Their ship is breaking down, and they need to collect a new power source. So they land on this planet. Oh, and fucking Sam Rockwell's character might be one of my favorites. His name is Guy. Yes, yes. And he played an extra on one episode. And he's just there for the ride. He thinks it's really cool that he's part of the show
now.
Yeah,
but, like, the extra he played was, like, a redshirt who, like, got killed. So he's like, oh, God,
yeah.
I'm going to die.
He got killed on episode, like, 87 or something. So they're going down to this planet, and he's having an existential crisis because he's like, I thought I was going to stay on the ship because I thought I was the one that gets killed when the main crew goes behind. But what if I'm the expendable one and I'm going to die? And Sigourney Weaver's like, calm down, like, you're fine. He's like, I don't even have a last name. Nobody knows my last name. She's like, you have a last name. And he just goes, do I? Which is something I quote, like, almost every day of my life.
What's even funnier is when they see, like, the aliens who, like, are small and, like, eat things. Sigourney Weaver's just like, oh, no, they're going to kill Guy. Instead of, oh, no, they're going to kill us. And it's...
Oh, God.
It's also very funny, just the role reversal of Sigourney Weaver as, like, a sci-fi badass into this character. Like,
yeah.
She plays a total ditz that literally her only job is to repeat the computer commands, which is fantastic. Anyway, so they get this power source. Jason Nesmith gets left. Tim Allen gets left on the planet. And then Tony Shalhoub's character has to transport
Just to make it confusing, can we exclusively refer to Tony Shalhoub as Dr. Monk?
Sure, why not? So Dr. Monk has to transport Tim Allen off of the planet, but it's never been used before because the transporter is made to work with human bodies, and this is the first humans that have ever been there. And so he, like, transports a creature just to test it, and it ends up being inside out, and then it explodes.
The double whammy.
And it's just... I'm going to probably go into too much detail here, so I'm going to have to cut it back. But basically, they fight the bad guy. They end up winning. They come together as a crew. But the only reason they actually do any good and they succeed is because they have a real walkie-talkie that goes from space to Earth. Mm-hmm. And they have these super fans back on Earth, these teenage kids that are like huge fans of the show, super nerds
like
about
everything.
It, get really detailed. And they have to like go into the heart of the ship, and he like calls up these kids and is like, yo, I need you to tell me how to get to the heart of the ship so that I can turn off this auto self-destruct. And so really the kids are the hero because they tell them how to actually save the day and they help them land back on Earth.
Well, their landing wasn't really very smooth.
It wasn't great. They crash into the convention center.
I mean, it was a hell of an entrance.
If I went to a Star Trek convention and, you know, like the Galileo crashed into the con hall, I'd be pretty pumped, so, you know,
yeah.
Can't complain about that.
I mean, unless, like, it destroys your car.
Well, the Galileo is a shuttle. That's about the size of a car. That's why I said the Galileo and not a starship. Try and follow along. Keep up with the program.
You're a nerd.
Right. The saucer section.
The saucer section is, like, bigger than my... Anyway, well, it's big.
Bigger than your what?
House.
I was gonna say his penis.
I mean, I would hope so. You can't house 1,014 crew members in my penis.
Oh, I really hope that's true. The movie ends with Guy joining the crew, and there's a reboot of the show. Tony Shalhoub's character falls in love with one of the aliens.
Dr. Monk.
One of the Thermians, and they, like, totally have sex in front of Sam Rockwell's character, and it's hilarious because he's like, oh, no, that's so wrong.
The movie generally pulls off slapstick pretty well.
Yeah, and they're rebooting the show, and, like, everybody's really into it, and they've saved the day. But it's just a fantastic movie.
Why do you love this movie so much?
I think
I like this movie, but I didn't know this about you, so I'm like really curious.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I think it's because I love Star Trek a lot, and like it really does such a good job of lovingly recreating some of the fandom and how ridiculous some sci-fi shows can be, but like how there's so much good to be told in the stories and the whole culture that surrounds
it. Also, it's just a really quotable movie. There's just a lot of good lines.
Yeah, it's super quotable. I think like everything that happens is hilarious. There's not a single part of that movie that's supposed to be a joke that I don't think is like very funny. And I just go back to, apparently Patrick Stewart, when it first came out, didn't want to see it. He was really upset. He was like this is going to be absolute garbage.
And then Jonathan Frakes called him.
Jonathan Frakes called him and was like, dude, you got to go see this movie. And they went to go see it. And after watching it, he was like, the whole audience was cracking up. And like, he just really loved it. Like, there's a scene, when they have to go into the belly of the ship to turn off the auto-destruct. And there's like chompers in the middle of it for no reason. And Sigourney Weaver is like yelling and going through. She's just like, this is a badly written episode. Like, whoever wrote this should die.
Yeah. It's kind of how I feel about this episode
like this
of the Comic Geeking program. Ah, damn it, Chowder.
Oh,
okay.
Brutal. Anyway, I love this movie, and I wanted to talk about it today, so that's this. Woo. We've gotten to spend a little time listening to me talk about something that I love so much. We are going to have our lovely representatives talk about their domains for a little bit too. So, Chowder, why don't you go ahead and start telling us about yours?
So, YouMayNiki. As said before, it's actually the odd one out of all these domains because it's not Star Trek related and it's also not like any kind of meditation on fandom. So, anyways, it was originally released in 2004. As a freeware game, it was developed by this Japanese developer, one person, by the way, who goes under the pseudonym Kikiyama. Kikiyama. I think that's how it's pronounced. I'm so sorry.
Judging by how Chowder leans closer to the screen every time he says a proper noun, I think this is just Wikipedia talking to us vicariously through Chowder.
No, I'm just like double checking so that I'm not wrong, you know?
All right.
I feel you.
Look, I'm not even having Wikipedia open right now.
Yeah, holding your hands in front of the camera demonstrates that to me. Thanks.
I don't know how to demonstrate it.
I'm not touching my computer. How could I be reading it?
Okay. So, anyways, what was it? Okay, so Yume Nikki is a surrealistic game about a shut-in girl who, whenever she goes to sleep, she goes into this dream world where she goes to these various doorways and just experiences some weird-ass shit. It's ambiguous enough that it's read in many different ways. It's basically very open and stuff, and, yeah, that about sums up Yume Nikki.
Oh, cool game.
I know so much about it.
Well, I'm sure the fandom is probably more important.
Hmm. Yeah, that's exactly why I wanted to talk about Yume Nikki. It's a really influential game. This, along with Kate's Story, a different Japanese freeware game that came out later that year, are, like, super influential amongst, like, indie developers. And, like, Yume Nikki has, like, this very dedicated fan base who, like, make their own fan games. And they basically have the blessing of the original creator to make those fan games, as long as they're not, like, profiting off it or anything. And there's all these, like, fan games of Yume Nikki, like Yume Tuki, Mad Father, Yume Nishi.
So it's almost like fanfics, but instead of stories, it's people are just making their own games.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, and then there's also just the games that are influenced by Yume Nikki. And Yume Nikki has a lot of fan games, and some are, like, fantastic. Some are, you know, amateur stuff made by people for whom it might be the first time they've made a game. But, like, regardless of where it lies on that quality scale, the fact that they've been motivated to, like, go and make these games, to make fan art that this game could motivate people to do something more, it's something wonderful. And when Laura said that the theme of this episode was going to be fandom, I predicted we were going to talk a lot about the negative aspects of fandom, which, you know, you almost kind of have to because fandom gets kind of fucked up at times, but...
Reasons I didn't talk about Sonic the Hedgehog.
I'm glad you did it. You know, I guess I wanted to, since I see myself talking a lot about negative fandoms as well, I just kind of wanted to counteract some of that with, like, maybe good examples of fandom, how it can drive us and motivate us and do great things.
Nice, which I think is actually more the theme that I was going with than more the negative, because I do love Galaxy Quest so much. That
was beautiful, Chowder. Yeah. You just won the Gold Star Student of my heart.
Aww, that's so meaningless.
Jesus fucking Christ, man.
Brutal.
I know, that was a little harsher than normal. I'm sorry. Well, Chowder, thank you so much. We are going to now hear from Colin to tell us a little bit about USS Callister.
So, Black Mirror is not a show I watch very much. The only other episodes I've seen are the ones that we watched for episode 18, Playtest in San Junipero, and I haven't had a whole lot of reasons to get into it. And then everyone started talking about, have you seen the new Star Trek episode of Black Mirror? And I was like, hold up, what's going on here? And that episode is USS Callister. Like most Black Mirror episodes, this is a little fucked up.
True.
So it starts off very much like Galaxy Quest with just like a very corny... It's a recreation of the 1960s original series Star Trek in tone and in theme, but it's clearly its own characters. It's got terrible dialogue. It's got sexism. It's got bad models. It's not very good, but it's...
It has the accents.
Yeah, the transatlantic way of speaking. Mm. And then it flashes to real life, and all those characters in the show work at a video game company. That video game company is called Callister Incorporated, and the guy who founded it is a huge fan of a show called Space Fleet. Star Trek, Starfleet, Space Fleet, aha. And he's just a gigantic fan of it, but he's nerdy and he's quiet. And everyone kind of rubs him the wrong way at work. And what he does is he takes the DNA of those people, brings it home, uploads the DNA into a modded version of their game. So he traps copies of people in a torturous Star Trek game that he built where he's the captain and he abuses everybody under his control.
Oh boy.
It's pretty fucked.
Yeah. And they are completely isolated from the rest of the world. So the game is called Infinity, but they live in a development build of Infinity. So they're not connected to the main servers. They can't reach out to anyone. They can't communicate. But they're fully aware that every time this character Daly comes home and logs into the game, he's going to torture them unless they fantasy roleplay Space Fleet with him exactly the way he wants to.
And they have all the same memories of their original selves, so they don't at first realize that they're in a game.
Yeah, No, that's exactly right. And they're trying to escape. And at one point, when he realizes they're trying to break out, Captain Daly walks in and says, "Space Fleet is a belief system founded on the very best of human nature, a goal for us to strive for the betterment of the universe and life itself."
And you assholes are fucking it up!
And it's just like this whole very Star Trek thing, and then he just starts screaming. And this entire episode, I think, talks about toxic fandom. I think most people can agree Star Trek tries to talk about positive things, but a lot of the people who are really into Star Trek are maybe not necessarily people you want to talk to. Reasons I'm on a podcast and not talking to real people. So,
hey, I'm a real person.
So they also take ideas from gaming culture and the toxicity of that, and how people in the gaming community are frequently very vitriolic, very abusive, and very angry.
Gamergate.
So Robert Daly basically feels like one of these people who hates himself in real life. Everyone at work is like coming down on him or making his life more difficult. So he escapes into this game world built around this nostalgic fantasy. But it's not about the values of that fantasy. It's about him exercising his power complex and his ego. And the end of the episode results in them scamming him, breaking out, and they get out of the mod and into the rest of the real world game, the main execution of the game, Infinity. And Daly is stuck in his VR headset, and for all we know, he dies. We don't really know what happens. Maybe someone comes and finds him. I don't know. But it's a triumph of people looking for freedom of expression, freedom from tyranny and being oppressed, and just trying to live their lives. And the end of the episode is them breaking free of the, quote, wholesome universe of Space Fleet into a world where they have penises and vaginas again.
Yeah.
They can swear as much as they want. And the main character, Nanette Cole, sits in the captain's chair and says, let's fuck off somewhere. And it just felt like a perfect way to say, hey, there is so much negativity to holding on to these old values. What if we just let it go, embrace what we've got, and be the best people we can? I think that is how to take the opposite tack to Galaxy Quest. What's the negativity of this thing, and how do you turn it into the positive?
Nice. Well, thanks, Colin.
You're welcome.
So now that we've gotten a chance to hear from our lovely representatives, we are going to move on to the discussion. I did have a specific question for Chowder, if we want to kick that out. I was wondering, I mean, this sounds really awesome that people are spawning their own games as a fandom reaction to this one game, which I'm not going to remember the name of at the moment.
Yume Nikki.
Right. Yes.
Sorry.
That's okay.
I figured maybe the audience would like to reiterate too. It's a Japanese name, so I figured like an English-speaking audience might have trouble with it.
All right, Chatter, what is it?
Yume Nikki.
Yume Nikki.
Yep.
I'm going to go write that on the chalkboard a few times. I'll be right back.
Cool. I was wondering if they ever run into, like, intellectual property issues, if they're spawning these games that are similar. Like, how are people getting around that?
Well, really, it's just the developer who really just doesn't participate a lot, you know? Like, we don't actually know who Kikiyama really is, and they tend to keep to themselves. Pretty much it's because nobody really went, stop that, you know?
Right. And how similar are these games? Like, are the best ones, like, very similar?
Yeah. They all use, like, the same framework, right? Like, the original Yume Nikki, it's like, there's only really one room, and then you go to sleep, and then you go to the dream world, and there's, like, a hub place with all these doors, and you go into these worlds, and those worlds have, like, items. And basically, it's more about the experience of going through this surreal place than any kind of larger story or any kind of winning. And, like, these fan games take that framework. One room, go to sleep, dream world, items, doors. And, like, they put their own spin on it. They can often have completely different characters, different items, different worlds. Oftentimes, they'll have nothing to do with Yume Nikki aside from that framework.
That structure, yeah.
Yeah, that structure.
Cool.
Well, I'm actually kind of curious. I mean, when you're looking at how all those fan games maybe work a little bit differently, I think that fan projects can kind of go two ways. Either, you know, try and get closer to what you think is the heart of the original, or use it as a springboard to express more of yourself or find something new. Do you find that they maybe lean more in one way or the other? Like, are they patronizing or are they their own thing?
Well, it really does depend from game to game. Some of them are super derivative. Some of them are really clever. And like a good example is Yume Tuki, right? It's like this large collaborative effort from multiple people. And when you play it, it feels like it has a completely different tone, where Yume Nikki is kind of dark and kind of unsettling. Yume Tuki is actually kind of bright, but it's still got like kind of that spirit of Yume Nikki to it. But like some of the other fan games will just be basically a reskinned Yume Nikki, you know? So it varies. And sometimes, I have played a couple that just went too far in being a reskin, where it just really doesn't feel like the original author put their own spin on it.
Yeah.
So it's like straddling line between complimenting and just stealing, I guess. Yeah.
Cool.
But, you know, most of the fan games I've played really do put their own spin on it, I think. So yeah, there you go.
No, that sounds really cool. I mean, I think it's a really amazing thing to be able to just like make a game because you're into a game. Like, I think that's a really cool concept. Now, Colin, so you were talking a little bit about how the USS Callister pulls out some of those negative fan emotions and negative fan reactions.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if you wouldn't mind kind of comparing, contrasting that like a little bit more in depth, more about like why you chose the negative versus the positive that I think Galaxy Quest is.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to talk very, very briefly about Star Trek for a sec, just and why
it is. That's not allowed.
Okay, just kidding. We picked USS Callister and Galaxy Quest.
And you can't talk about Star Trek.
Can't talk about Star Trek? So, Star Trek is a touchstone for this thing because Star Trek kind of modernized fandom in some pretty important ways. It is certainly not like the first global or public fandom, but things like...
I think a lot of people like to attribute that to Sherlock Holmes, the first...
Sherlock Holmes, yeah, would typically, I think, be like considered the first. But Trek was one of the first shows where like a letter writing campaign got it back on the air. So the passion of the fans brought it, you know, there. Then fans watching it in syndication led to the movies. Fans paying for the movies led to Next Generation, blah, blah, blah. Now we have Star Trek Discovery. Like, it's all fucking all over the place. And I think the willingness of people to feed into these things that they care about, much like with the... Already forgot the Yukama Maki games name. Sorry. I know. I already forgot. This is my fault. I know.
You know what? I got it. You can use the English translation of the name. Dream Diary.
Dream Diary.
Cool.
So, I think that the feelings that you can have about a fandom, they really change over time with culture. Star Trek being so old, one of the things that Callister likes to lampoon very much is like the sort of like sexist, racist undertones of a show made in the 60s. A show that was very progressive at the time, but does not hold up in that way anymore. Like, making the girl with an accent an alien with different colored skin, she says, that's racist as fuck. And I'm like, yep, it kind of is. The captain always trying to kiss the women.
Problematic.
William Shatner's Captain Kirk is known for being a womanizer, but it never did it like that in the show. So that's taking like a piece of reputation, like a fan headcanon, and spinning it into that. Because that really did not happen in the show. He had like two relationships. And then there was the Orions, but they can hypnotize people. It's a thing. Don't worry about it.
And like the thing everyone jokes about, which is Captain Kirk banging a green space chick.
That's the Orion, yep.
Oh, okay.
Which, you know, Archer did too, so whatever. But all of these things are brought up, I think, in both Galaxy Quest and in USS Callister. And the thing about USS Callister that I noticed, and something that rubbed me the wrong way the first time I watched it, is it admonishes all these things about Star Trek and says, technobabble is stupid. Like, after a while, the characters bitch each other out for saying nonsense technical words. And they all talk about these terrible things. And it never openly comes out for Star Trek in any way. It really only says bad things about it. And I think that's because Star Trek was just a platform it was using to discuss the toxicity of fandom when people use it for these reasons. Whereas Galaxy Quest, it took those same things and it said, yeah, these are silly, but like they're all pointing towards something good. And I think that that's because the movie just had a different point.
Yeah, a different tone.
And just because USS Callister said all those negative things out loud doesn't mean it didn't care. There was one moment at the end that I noticed when they go through the wormhole, they leave the space fleet mod and they enter regular Infinity. Graphically, the bridge of the ship they're on changes. So it is no longer stylized like the 1960s. But it's the same set, Everything's organized the same way. It's just more modern. It's got white lights, and it's got transparent pieces of glass, and it's got lens flares. It looks dead on like the J.J. Abrams Star Trek movies. Like, yeah. 100%, there's no question. So even though they go out of their way, I think it was their subtle way of saying, like, yeah, it's pretty easy to take all these terrible things. Let's look at the new stuff. Let's look at what we've got and treat that as a positive. Not quite as in-your-face as Galaxy Quest.
No, I mean, Galaxy Quest is a comedy. And
yeah.
And Black Mirror is not. But I think also at the end of that episode, because I did get a chance to watch it before this, it did have that feeling of Star Trek where you're excited to explore the whole universe that's around you in a very positive way. And they run into this guy that's like a total gamer dick that's just like, oh, trades for whatever. And he's like, well, fuck off, get out of my space. And they're like, all right, fine. Like, we have so much exploring to do. And it felt really positive.
Yeah. And at that point, nobody preached Starfleet values. Nobody was like, we did it. But yeah, they were excited to explore. They came together as a crew. And I think it was smart of them to say, like, let's just focus on positive behavior instead of, like, verbally celebrating a specific thing. And I think that might have been the smart way to do it.
Like, from what you guys are describing, it also sounds like USS Callister is also kind of addressing hypocritical fandom, where it's like fandom that'll like just completely ignore what the values of the property are. Like,
right,
Star Trek, for example, like there were Star Trek fans who completely hated the fact there was a black woman as the main character in Star Trek Discovery. You know, you got racist Star Trek fans, you got gamers who like talk about how they want more freedom and more choices, and then like when people give options for like female characters or characters who are like LGBT, those same gamers will be like, no, limit the options. You get the idea.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think the quote I said earlier about the, and you assholes are fucking it up.
Yeah.
I think that was like the seminal moment where you realize like, yeah, this guy likes Space Fleet, but Space Fleet is not the core of the issue here.
No.
But yeah, sorry, Laura, we've talked about negative stuff for a little while now.
That's okay. I did lead with questions that I guess kind of had a negative tilt to them.
Yep.
But something that I love so much about Galaxy Quest is that it is clearly made by people who love Star Trek, right? Like, it is a love story to both the show and its fans, I think.
Yeah, I get the feeling that there are a lot of, like, in-jokes in there that went over my head because I'm not, like, a hardcore Star Trek fan.
To be honest, not as many as you might think.
Yeah.
USS Callister has a lot of that, but Galaxy Quest is very good about putting it all up front. Like the by the hammer of Grabthar thing, that is not from Star Trek. That's more just like a nerd thing. Like, here, let's give you a rallying cry.
Right.
That sounds obscure.
By Grabthar. Oh, my God. I love the scene where he's like, by Grabthar's hammer. What a savings. Ah, shit. It's just a great movie. But I think it's like, it's made by people who love it. And I think one thing that I really liked about it is that it also glorifies the fans. Like, it talks about how this whole experience would never happen without the fans. And the fans really made this, you know, TV show into an actual space crew possible. And I think it really talks about the positivity of it all. And I don't know if I really have a super specific question about that, but I was kind of hoping to talk about it a little bit in the discussion. Like, is that how you see, like, is that how you perceive fandom, or do you tend to think of it more as the negatives?
I tend to walk both sides of that line because I am so into, like, sci-fi and, you know, a lot of the big nerd spheres and gaming in particular. I'm a very avid gamer.
What?
So, yeah, it has been a thing I've done in my life at times. For example, Destiny. I gotta talk about Destiny for a second.
Sure.
Destiny, I've talked about it on the podcast before, had a terrible launch and got better over time because the developer, Bungie, said, you don't like these things. Let's fix these things. And they're a company that is very forward about being like, let us listen to you. Let us be open. Let us communicate with you and let us give you guys what you want. And it's, you know, it's a business thing. So they need to walk that line between giving fans everything they want and making a product they can make money off of. And it got a lot better over time. Destiny 2 came out, and at first people were like, oh my god, this is amazing. But over time, people started to find issues with it. And, like, you'll read articles as recently as, like, a month or two ago where people are like, Bungie has betrayed fans' faith in everything they do. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Because you can't run the raid as many times for, like, high-end gear, and it gives you that level of hypocrisy of people saying, like, give us what we want, and then they do, and then it's not everything, and you have to keep going back and forth. And it's such a turnoff to be invested in a community that is that negative.
Yeah, Overwatch is a bit like that, too. You know, they buff slash nerf a character. People complain instead of just learning how to work around it.
Right.
They do it again in this endless cycle, and it's kind of annoying.
And that's it. And it kind of makes me, as a player who is very invested, I've vocally spoken out against things with Destiny that I felt were problematic, mostly because I felt like I wasted money based on advertising that I didn't feel like gave me a complete picture.
Right.
But whether it's something that big or something as minute as, oh, I don't like the way that the colors work in this game, it really detracts from the experience to be surrounded by people who are having a terrible time. And my best experiences are when I tune all that out and I just sit down with a few people on a headset and we just run around doing whatever the fuck we want. We explore parts of the map we haven't seen. We blow up shit we've never blown up before. A new mission comes out. Let's run it as many times as we can to memorize all the nooks and crannies of it.
You learn how to climb a mountain and never succeed.
Yeah. Oh, shit. You still haven't done that, have you?
Nope. I've come really close.
That mob mentality just reaches so deep, and it feels so good to ignore it.
Yeah. Mm. So, much like Colin, I walk the line between loving fandom and kind of being hesitant in it. I definitely participate in plenty of fandoms, and, like, you know, I love the things that can come out of fandom, you know, fan art, toys that, like, people will make on their own. I just love seeing people, like, be inspired, and I love seeing people having a good time with it. But, like, you know, there's always those people who get overzealous about fandom. You know, the gatekeeping, just the inability to ever be satisfied with something.
Being exclusionary, not welcoming people into your fandom.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And just overall, just being a jerk, you know? And I generally just try to not ever deal with those people. If someone I see is, like, exhibiting those traits, unfollow them, leave them alone. Just stick around with the good parts and just enjoy that ride, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing I have to pay attention to is I do like to look at things critically. So if there is something you love, you don't just want to say, oh, free pass, everything it does is amazing.
Yeah, you're right. Now that you point that out, I would like to make an addendum. It's not that I want to, like, blindly follow something. It's that...
No, you want to surround yourself with the positives of the thing that you're enjoying.
And you want to look for opportunities to make it even better.
Exactly.
And that is, I think, where people sometimes miss the mark, because you start with that intention of, oh man, it would be so cool if this, but if you, like, just lock on to those feelings instead of the ideals behind it, it kind of sticks you in one place instead of actually figuring out what you can actually be doing to enjoy yourself, because then it's not enjoyment.
No.
And for critical stuff, I mean, I'm reading Ready Player One right now. I just want to read it before the movie comes out.
I've read that book. Holy God, it's terrible. That is my opinion on that book.
I enjoyed it.
So here's the thing, is the book, I don't love the way it's written. I don't think that the book is a great literary work. I like the plot.
And that's just a nice way of saying it is incompetently written. Holy shit, it reads like a 13-year-old wrote it. I'm sorry, go on, Colin.
Toxic fandom. So
No, I can't be a fandom. I hate it.
No. So Chatter, I kind of agree with you. I don't think that it has a ton of literary value. I don't think that it is something that I enjoy reading for the sake of reading it, much as I do with something like, you know, Lord of the Rings. The way that Tolkien reads, it's just like butter into my brain. It's beautiful. My brain is fat now.
And
scraped over too much bread. But the thing about Ready Player One is that it is a book that's basically this guy, Ernest Cline, the author. It is his fan fiction. He grew up in the 80s, and it's just him saying, here's all these fucking things I love. I just want to share it. And whether or not you like the book, very successful. A lot of people like the book.
You know, what's really interesting is that I enjoyed my experience with it, but as I'm thinking about it, I didn't read it. I listened to Will Wheaton read it.
No, that's fair.
And it was really enjoyable. Like, it was a great listen for an audiobook. I don't know what it would be like to read it, but I really enjoyed the audiobook version.
I'm enjoying the parts that I'm reading where I'm like, oh man, I know that. Or parts where I'm like, I don't know that. What is it? It's got me to look stuff up. So no, I don't think it's a fantastically written book. I like the story. I like the expression of fandom. And I think it's just been a recent example of, like, this is such a perfect way to share a love for something and to get other people to love the things you love.
I guess that's where I contrast you, Khan. I think this book is a bad way to share the things you love.
Because you think it's badly written or because you think the means of expression is bad?
The means of expression. I actually do mean the means of expression because, like, the bad writing flows into the means of expression because, like, the way the book will often handle stuff is, like, Del Toro, Spielberg,
yeah,
Lucas. I study these guys. Yeah. Intently, because they are the masters of their... It
felt very much like a Mary Sue fan fiction.
Yeah, it's like that thought process of everything I ever needed to learn, I learned from 80s comedies, you know? And it, like, veers into that Black Mirror episode where it's like, I learned everything I need to know from Star Trek, that 60s show whose values have kinda not aged well.
Yeah, but then if you leave yourself in that echo chamber and never break out of it... You're gonna get stuck. But yeah, but even so, putting aside like the narrative of the book, I think coming back to Galaxy Quest and how, like, fun fact about Galaxy Quest, in 2013 at a convention, Star Trek Into Darkness came out and they ranked all the Star Trek movies. Galaxy Quest got 7th.
That's so fucking,
like,
amazing.
Even the people who, like, could possibly be offended by this expression of love for Star Trek loved it. And it's just regardless of how certain things can rub people the wrong way. I think, yeah, if you're coming at it from that place of passion.
I think that it's a very Starfleet expression of fandom. It focuses on the positives and it really brings all of the good parts of it and acknowledging some of the cheesier aspects of it, but they just really focus on the positivity of a fandom.
You know, fandom and religion are actually, I feel, cut from the same cloth. Mm-hmm. You know, you have this
Oh boy, buckle up, folks.
We have 20 seconds left in this 20 discussion.
20 seconds of offensive material. Here we come.
They come from the same cloth. You have this thing people are passionate about, and they'll honor it like someone would honor a pantheon, and they build things to, like, honor that, from artwork to whatever, and basically it's a double-edged sword in that it can create passionate people who go out and do good things, but can also create overzealous people who, like, don't follow that thing and just, like, corrupt it. And I guess it's always important to keep in mind both things, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. And I really like that that Galaxy Quest is the positive side of that. I do want to say one last thing, and I guess now is kind of the time to do it.
Yeah.
So I've often spoken, and Colin even joked about at the beginning of this episode, I hope it's on a recording somewhere, that I'm a purist. And so I often don't look out for these extra bits of information or dig deeper into things. And I had this really crazy experience while I was at the Museum of Pop Culture where I got it for the first time. Like, I understood why people go that extra mile and spend that extra time and dedicate themselves to continuing their experience with a particular piece of media. And I don't know why it hit me now. And I don't know why it hit me in that particular manner. It was such a cool experience to be able to, like, see the costumes from Battlestar Galactica and, like, be excited to be in the same room as them. And it was just really perfect because I had planned out this episode before we went to Seattle. And then I was in this museum surrounded by awesome things from some of the shows that I love the best. And there was fucking Saris. Like, it was this beautiful moment of everything wrapping together where, like, I think for the first time I really understood in a way that I hadn't before, like, why people go that extra mile and why somebody would be motivated to create a whole movie that's making fun of, in the most loving way, something that they love.
And then someone came up behind you and called you a casual.
And it was Charles. And now it is time to wrap up the discussion. Now, here we would have had an opportunity to answer some listener questions. There weren't any for this particular episode, but if you are interested in having some of your questions answered, we're actually posting these topics and themes ahead of time on our Facebook page on the Monday before. I believe it's the Monday before, not before it airs, but
before we record.
Before we record. And so you can get some of your questions answered, whether that be super specific to the topic, something that you're interested in analyzing, or why not? Ask us about us.
Or if you just have, like, a personal question, like, if you just want to ask me, like, hey, Colin, how you doing? I could use a friend. It's fine.
Hey, Colin, why are you wearing some stupid sunglasses? Tell
Shut
me
up.
More.
They're cool.
Please validate us. We want attention.
We would love attention. We'd love to hear from you, though. We did have a couple of listener questions in the last episode I was on. It was really cool to be able to kind of get some outside perspective. Sometimes coming up with questions for these are really difficult because you don't really get an opportunity to figure out what you're going to ask until you're most of the way through the domains. And sometimes it's nice to have somebody else contribute too. It makes it a richer discussion. So feel free to reach out with those. We'd love to answer them. We make those weekly posts on Facebook and Twitter. Twatter?
Welcome to Twatter.
Blech. Twattertown. So if you have questions, those are the two places you can go to ask them. Thank you guys so much for being a part of that discussion and for being part of this episode. But we are going to move on to the rating section, and you guys get to start by rating us, or wow, rating us. Apparently I have multiple people now. I'm going to ask you guys to rate Galaxy Quest and fandom on a scale from 1 to 5.
Okay, 1 to 5.
I feel like I'm usually slightly more prepared for these because I think of these in advance, and for some reason I just fucking didn't. So we're going to write on a scale.
Do you want to say long agonizing scrapings of the hull against space dock?
No, I think that's going to be the gold star student award. but for now, I'm going to have you guys rate it on 1 to 5 beryllium spheres.
Okay. Fair enough.
Chowder, go ahead.
I'm going to give it, I think, 3.5 beryllium spheres. It's funny. I definitely did not expect to laugh as much as I did when I watched this. It's very quotable, and the actors are all just doing a great job. Even if I'm not like a big Star Trek guy, I could follow the jokes and I could just enjoy it. It's good, like good positive meditation on fandom, and it's a solid movie. So yeah, I think 3.5 beryllium spheres.
Cool.
There you go. Hopefully I don't get eaten.
No, honestly, I think I'm going to agree with you on that. I'm also going to give it 3.5 out of 5 beryllium spheres, just because I first watched this movie when I was very young, and I was like, oh, it's a Star Trek joke, but I was not smart enough to get all the allegory. First time I watched it as an adult was like a year ago. I watched it expecting to be like, oh my God, this is going to be amazing. And I watched it, and I'm like, eh, it's a funny movie that I can connect to. I certainly don't love it, but I super appreciate it for what it is. You're right, it is very funny. The cast is excellent. But much like, you know, Seth MacFarlane's The Orville on its best episodes, I'm just kind of like, all right, I get it. I know what this is. It's Star Trek. It's moving forward. I can follow this. Doesn't really strike the passion in me. To be fair, I also don't love USS Callister. I don't know. It's not that. Maybe I'm just really protective of Star Trek, and if you try to make anything about it, I'm gonna beat you up.
That's a little toxic there, Kaelin. I think you might be a toxic fan.
Kaelin?
Like I said, overzealous fans.
Don't fuck
so
with my
pantheon. Unfortunately, because neither of them love this movie as much as I am, I cannot give out a Gold Student Star Award.
Gold Student Star Award? Have you said it right once this episode?
Probably not. Oh shit. No. And I'm probably not going to either. Oh, fuck. All right. Anyway, so now I'm going to award a gold star student and give a reward an agonizingly long
house
scrape out of the space dock as the gold star student award. Those pauses are legitimate. They're not added in for effect.
That was an agonizingly long reading of pulling out of space dock.
I'm sad that you're right. As much as this hurts me to do, Colin, you will be getting the gold star student award this week.
Damn it!
Yes.
Fuck these writers!
I was really worried.
This is the worst episode.
No, Chowder, this is the established thing of the show. We can't veer from that. We have to stick to these old tropes.
I'm mad because Colin is in the lead and I'm just making it worse, but you were able to bring the perspective of both the positive and negative fandoms and being able to bring it to a TV fandom and also the gaming fandom and kind of just the culture in general, I think deserved you the Gold Star Student Award. So,
well, thank you.
You know, I guess... congratulations or whatever.
Chowder, I do want to say, honestly, every time that you opened your mouth, I was like, oh, fuck, I'm not going to get it this week. So, well done.
I know. This is like the hardest part of the show every time, but it must be done. So, Chowder, I'm sorry.
It's because I didn't give you the broom last episode, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's definitely it. I hold grudges. What can I say? All right. Well, this has been a very entertaining episode to follow a very entertaining movie. So
yes,
thank you guys so much.
Let's tell the audience how entertained they are.
Fuck off. I was very entertained having this conversation with you guys.
Same. Yeah.
And so that about wraps it up. Thank you guys so much for listening to the Common Geeking program. I do hope that you enjoyed it as much as we do. I have been your host, Laura Kramer, and you probably won't find me because the idea of you guys finding me on social media creeps me out, so I don't really have a presence there. No offense to anyone in particular. I just tend to be a little bit more private than that. And I have been joined by these two lovely folks who can tell you about their social media presence themselves.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter. At Taimul Chaudhary. Spell the way you see it on the credits page.
Yeah, there's no way we're spelling your name out loud right now. It's all over our podcast. Go copy and paste it. You'll find him.
And yeah, you won't be able to sound that one out, so.
Well, Keenan thinks your name is pronounced Taimu, so like we got to work on us before we can work on the audience. My name is Colin Ketchin. I can be found online at SanaColinK. Also, you can see that on all the stuff. But if you look up my name or that on most platforms, there I am. Mostly Twitter and Facebook.
Awesome. And then be sure
Be sure to dip your friends in gold.
Yes.
Be sure to platinum coat all of your friends. Be sure to tune in next Friday on March 30th for our next episode, which will be hosted by Colin Ketchin. Colin, what are you guys talking about next week?
We're doing a common briefing program, which is just our sort of news roundtable. Myself, Pat Brem, and Austin Liebers are going to talk about current events. We're going to be recording only a few days before air, just to try and make sure that we can get super up-to-date stuff. So leave us those questions online. We can talk about anything. We're going to have a lot of fun.
Very cool. So be sure to catch up on all the latest geek news. If there is something in particular that you see and you want to talk about, we may not have caught it. We probably saw it at least once, but if somebody has a question, send it on over. Apparently, we'll have some up-to-date stuff, so that's really cool. So tune in. That is Friday, March 30th. Thank God this episode is about to end because my words are getting worse.
By the hammer of Grabathar, let this damn episode end.
By Grabthar's hammer, all right? It's by Grabthar's hammer.
Toxic fandom. Hashtag toxic fandom.
But feel free to follow us on Facebook or Twitter at Geeking Program. Any engagement that you have with us, like sharing a post or tagging us or tweeting, hashtag CGP, will enter you into a raffle where you pick a topic for a future episode, which is really fun. So we're trying to get our listeners more involved with the questions and the topic choosing. So please feel free to do that. Reviewing us on Apple Podcasts is a super helpful way to grow our show and make sure that new people can check us out as well. And we'll read new reviews on air if we get them.
Yeah, speaking of fandom, we could use a little more of that ourselves, guys.
Yeah, right.
We could use a little bit of positive fandom right about now. The Funk Soul Brother, check it out now. The Funk Soul, okay. Anyway, thank you so much for listening, subscribing, sharing, asking questions, and everything that you do. We will talk to you next week.
Crispy.
This episode of the Common Geeking Program was hosted by Laura Kramer, joined by representatives Taimul Chaudhary and Colin Ketchin. This episode is sponsored by this editor believing the wrong person won the Gold Star Student Award.
I'm really happy for you. I'm going to let you finish.
Chowder
had one of the best
episodes
of all time. One of the best
episodes
of all time.
The podcast is created and produced by Colin Ketchin and Jeff Levitt, with this episode edited by me, Jeff, and featuring original music by Colin Ketchin. Next week, we're going to be doing yet another common briefing program, so be sure to tune in for that on March 30th. And thank you for listening to this.
Now, because I pooped in the butt, should we end all of our recordings now? I don't know.
I'm going to try to make that a thing now. Just in life. Oh, well, because I pooped in the butt.
Because I pooped in the butt? Well, yeah, I don't know.
Jesus Christ.